Well, you're back, and welcome back. This is Hard to Believe, but episode number 10 of our Far Middle podcast. I am Nick Deolius. You can follow me on Twitter at Nick Deolius, and you can also give my website, nickdeolius.com, a look when you've got some time. Always posting new commentary and, of course, upcoming chapters of The Leech. Today, we are dedicating our podcast to talk about an individual and a subject that at first blush may not make much sense if you look at our prior nine podcasts and the themes therein. And that person is Pope Francis, and of course the subject is the Catholic Church, the Catholic faith, Pope Francis being the leader of that that movement. Why in the world are we talking about a sitting pope on the Far Middle podcast? Well, I suppose there's two reasons, and they're linked together. The first reason is, I think I've mentioned this before in prior podcasts, that I am Catholic. A lot of my upbringing and my childhood and formative years were heavily shaped by the Catholic Church and its teachings. I was an altar boy. I went to a Catholic grade school early on before I shifted over to public school. And that's always been a part of my life and my family's life through the generations up until current day. But the second reason is really the driver as to why we're discussing Pope Francis today. And that is that the Catholic Church has fundamentally evolved under his leadership. And it's hard to believe, speaking about his leadership, that Pope Francis has been sitting as the head of the Catholic faith now for over 7 years. Time certainly flies, and this is another example of that. I can't tell you how over those 7 years my view has done a complete 180. I couldn't be more different, I suppose, when you compare what it was when he first became Pope and what it is today. I remember vividly the couple of days when he was named to be the next pope, and just the excitement that that I felt, and the optimism, and frankly the pride that I had with respect to being a Catholic. And that wasn't something that was unique. There were millions of Catholics all across the globe that felt the same way. Today, very different with my view of Pope Francis and, frankly, where the Catholic Church is heading, or perhaps even where it's sitting already. Today, I've got a much darker view of Pope Francis because we've had, as I said, over 7 years now of a record where we can see and differentiate between the image and the optics and the reality, between the talk and, frankly, the actions or the walk. And when you contrast those things, the reality that you see, the actions that you see, are quite troubling. You think back to history class, at least those times when you were paying attention, and we used to learn, and we were told that there were periods of time throughout history of the Vatican and the Catholic faith, which, you know, covers hundreds and hundreds of years, where you would have this this conflict where an interloper would challenge the authority of a legitimately sitting pope. And we called these interlopers antipopes. So there were periods of time throughout the history of the Catholic Church, which used to be, by the way, not just one of the most influential political bodies in the civilized world, but at times the most influential political body in the civilized world. So this was a big deal, with the pope being sort of the president or CEO of this massively impactful institution. There were times when interlopers would challenge, and at times you had this pope, anti-pope, fighting for leadership of the hearts and minds of the Catholic faithful. I think when you look at Pope Francis and you look at the 7+ years of his record to date, he has effectively evolved from originally being a legitimately elected and sitting pope into one that in many ways, at least from a spiritual and from a perspective of subject matter, has become an antipope. And you see this across two primary avenues. The first being what would traditionally be well within the bounds of the pope's faith, morals, and ethics, what would be subject matter competencies for the Catholic Church and the pope leading the Catholic Church. So this is more of a dropping the ball, I'll say, with leading on those issues, and some of them very critical and crucial, as we'll discuss. But then it's also been coupled on a second front, which while Pope Francis has not been leading and paying attention to the stuff that matters and to the stuff that is subject matter relevant to the pope, He has instead shifted his attention and dragged the church into arenas and areas and subjects where no expertise exists and that do not have to do with faith, morals, or ethics tied to the Catholic faith. So it's been a 1-2 combination, so to speak, in many ways. And when you look at that 1-2 combination, on one hand, the dropping the ball on the stuff that does matter, that has been effectively a loss of moral authority of Pope Francis. And then you couple that with this expansion of influence into arenas that are not areas of expertise when it comes to the church, it's created a crisis of credibility. And whenever you have loss of moral authority coupled with a crisis of credibility, that is going to spell trouble. And that is a big combination of reasons as to why I believe Pope Francis has evolved from Pope into anti-Pope. One of the big drivers why I changed my views of Pope Francis over the 7+ years of his reign has been that I am definitely a Catholic, but definitely also not a papist. And in the book, The Leech, I say that there's a big difference between a papist and a Catholic. A papist is someone who's going to blindly follow, blindly adhere to whatever the Pope says must go. And it doesn't matter what the subject matter might be. It doesn't matter how it compares to traditional Catholic doctrine. You just blindly follow the Pope. Whereas a Catholic, of course, is more in line with subscribing to the core tenets and teachings of traditional Catholic doctrine. So when you see Pope Francis wanting to delve headfirst into very complicated areas that have nothing to do with traditional Catholic doctrine. So you see him opining on energy policy or on global finance or on climate change science. Those are three subject matter areas that the Pope has weighed in on time and time again. You start to question whether this is something that has to do with traditional Catholic teachings or instead are these symptoms of an individual that's just looking to expand his authoritative reach and influence. Making matters worse, giving you even more concern, is what you would hear coming from the sort of administrative staff of the Pope in the Vatican. Father Rozica, who is on Francis's team of media advisors, he's gone on record bragging that Francis, quote, breaks Catholic traditions whenever he wants, end quote. And why does he do that? Well, Father Rozica says, because, quote, he is free from disordered attachments, end quote. You think about that statement from one of the media advisors of the Pope, you really start to get concerned because you're effectively hearing that the Pope doesn't care as much about traditional Catholic teachings. He can break those whenever he feels like it. And that those are, if anything, just disordered attachments that are holding him down with respect to what his ultimate objectives might be. Now, there's a flip side, corollary to on the one hand, is the Pope is expanding authority by getting into areas and subjects that the Catholic Church really has no expertise opining upon. While you're doing that, you are not paying attention. You are not staying focused and on message with areas that are right within the wheelhouse of the Catholic Church. Now, what are those subjects? There are things like abortion and gay marriage and contraception and divorce. And I've got my views on those, and in many instances, they're quite different than what the traditional Catholic view is on those. It's always been a struggle of mine internally. As I said earlier, I'm very socially liberal when it comes to these issues, but the Catholic doctrine isn't always as liberal as my views on those things. But nevertheless, you knew as a Catholic what the position was clearly on those issues with respect to the church. And when they evolved, everybody was put on notice that those views are evolving, and here's what the new refined view is going to be. That's no longer the case. Today, it depends on which mass you attend, what priest is speaking, what area or region of the church you're looking at, as to what the positions are on these items. And that, to me, is a very striking contrast to the way you would expect it to be or the way that it used to be over hundreds of years of legacy and history. And this also, as you might imagine, creates a sort of dissension or a group of different views and conflicting views within the church leadership itself. Cardinal Burke is a good example of this, where he has called out Pope Francis's unilateral expansion of authority. And he went so far as to remind fellow Catholics that the Pope utilizes his power in a manner that's inconsistent, or what he called a sinful manner, there's a duty for Catholics to disobey. It's an interesting perspective from the cardinal. And that also creates some interesting dynamics within the leadership of the Catholic faith and, of course, all of its flock. Now, I might argue that much of this behavior that you see coming from Pope Francis is really tied to, or its root lies within the business model of the Catholic Church and the Catholic faith and how that has fallen upon some challenging times and facing some serious headwinds. I reference in the book, The Leech, in this chapter that the Pope in many ways is the CEO of Salvation Inc. He's the head of an organized religion, and the organized religion has many aspects that follow or mimic that of a business. And the business model of the Catholic Church is facing some serious problems in modern day. Some of those are external, outside of the church's direct control. Some of them are self-induced, frankly. To just think about some of the problems externally, you can start with demographics, which in some ways is the ultimate, most important metric for something like an organized religion. I use the example of Brazil in the book. Brazil holds the most Catholics of any country on earth, but the percentage of Brazil's population is Catholic. It's dropping. It's gone from over 90% in 1970 to about two-thirds of the population in 2010. What's driving that? There's a couple of things. One, certainly the rise of evangelicals has taken, so to speak, market share away from Catholic and the Catholic Church. But you also have a lot of people now in Brazil and across the globe that don't have any particular or specific religious affiliation. So there's a lot of reasons driving that. But nevertheless, the followers or adherents to a religion are similar to sort of the customers, right, within a business. And if you're not holding steady or growing that follower base, you've got some demographic headwinds that you're going to need to address. Unfortunately, the Catholic Church also has a lot of challenges and headwinds when it comes to self-induced problems. The most obvious, the most troubling, of course, is the sex scandals with abuse of children that's gone on for many years. And you see the behaviors and the lack of transparency and some of the actions that have gone on across dioceses all over the planet. I can't tell you how troubling that is from the perspective of a Catholic. And the fact that that's occurred for as long as it did and on the scale that it did within your own religion or your own faith is quite troubling. You also see these problems rearing its head with financial issues, bloated budgets, and charities. Peter's Pence is the Pope's charity to help the poor. It's been shown or found out that 90% of Peter Pence's proceeds or funding was used not to go to the poor. Only about 10% ended up helping the poor. And the other 90% went to plug holes in the Vatican's administrative budget because of administrative bloat. That's not a good look. It's not a good optic for the leadership of the church. You also saw some issues with embezzlement in London real estate recently that allegedly have impacted the Vatican's finances by hundreds of millions of dollars. And then, of course, you've also got this debate that's ongoing. I spoke about how some of the traditional views of the church on areas like abortion get clouded. Well, now you've got this debate, I'm sure you've seen it, in the United States with whether or not President Biden or those politicians that are pro-choice when it comes to the abortion debate, whether they should be allowed to receive communion or whether they should be sanctioned or barred from receiving communion. So these optics, these challenges, whether they're financial, whether they're political, whether they deal with very serious issues like sexual abuse of children, and then the demographic challenges on top of it, those things all culminate in a really challenging time for anyone who would be sitting atop the Catholic faith, including, of course, Pope Francis. Now, we saw when we talked about different subject matter, and we talked about the Leech Way, that one of the tactics that's often employed will be whenever you're dealing with issues or problems or serious flaws in performance, you create a distraction. You camouflage those and basically say, don't look here. Instead, look over here. We talked about that with a host of different types of entities, big city mayors and the challenges facing the legitimate challenges, right, facing urban areas, big cities within our country, and instead how big city mayors are chasing after these other longer-term abstract issues to perhaps distract attention from the underlying tangible problems. We talked about certain public pension managers and how they are using retiree and active worker money. And instead of focusing on some of the really troubling financial metrics of the pension with respect to its funded or lack of funding levels versus promises made, it instead, the leadership of that public pension at times may want to go chase other things and distract attention on other types of activism or endeavors that have nothing to do with their fiduciary duties. Well, the Pope and Pope Francis might be in the same type of a situation and adopt the same type of a strategy and tactics to go along with it. So this gets back to, instead of focusing on those challenges and those crises that have afflicted the church of recent note and trying to overcome those demographics that that look at declining followers and a declining, shrinking flock, now you've got the Pope perhaps trying to rebrand, remarket the church to garner interest, to gain more attention, to grow followers by chasing things like climate change zealotry, like capitalism and slandering capitalism, like looking at things in areas of the world that enjoy a high quality of life and vilifying those areas as evil or sinful. I think and suspect at times that this might be more of a type of a symptom or set of symptoms that is really about the head of an organized religion, analogy being the CEO of a business, that sees serious headwinds and is looking for ways to creatively reverse those trends and get things back on, for lack of a better term, would be a growth path. And make no mistake, this issue of whether the Pope is speaking in an area that is firmly within the competency of the church and church doctrine versus going far afield from that and maybe an attempt to just either increase your authority or rebrand the church into something new. This is a big deal because it really speaks to the issue of papal infallibility. If the Pope is following procedure and speaking within the zone of authority that traditionally sets within Catholic doctrine, then he's infallible under Catholic faith, and what he says goes. And if he's not, then the doctrine of infallibility is not adhered to, and that calls into question on whether or not what he says goes and whether followers should adhere to it or not. So it's a big issue when you look at the scope of traditional authority and how far afield a sitting pope, Pope Francis or any pope, wants to go beyond that, and whether or not infallibility and the authority, the ultimate authority of the Pope as God's representative on earth is still going to hold true. By far the biggest arena where the Pope has just gone way beyond traditional Catholic teachings and really undermines, blows up the whole idea of papal infallibility is when it comes to the environment, particularly climate change. His most famous encyclical, an encyclical, by the way, is just sort of a position paper that the Pope would issue for the faithful. His most famous encyclical has been titled Laudato Si, which the translation of that is Praise Be to You. But more importantly, the subtitle of that encyclical is On Care for Our Common Home. Now, this is the Pope's manifesto when it comes to environmental policy, energy policy, and frankly, human quality of life. And when you give it a read, and I'd encourage you to do that, you can easily find it on the internet if you Google it or search for it, you're going to come away with the impression that Pope Francis has a very dark, stark view of the human condition, not a fan of technology, and not a fan of improving the quality of life of human beings across the globe, Catholic or otherwise. You can quickly see that he views life more in the lens of it being a mystery. I think he uses the term joyful mystery. And we should be very welcoming and happy and praise the fact that it's a mystery. The more that we solve it, the worse that we're going to be, which is an interesting view, very different than at least my view. He also has a lot of disdain for technology, and he can reference that in certain sections of the encyclical, but one of the sections that was interesting to me was he calls it, quote, a period of irrational confidence and progress in human abilities, end quote. So this speaks to the role of technology improving the human condition. From Francis's perspective, maybe not a good thing, but from, I think, the facts and looking at things rationally, science and technology have been great things. I look at that and I get shocked in reading that in modern day from a sitting pope. But then I think about the history and the legacy of the Catholic Church when it comes to science, and frankly, being anti-science, attacking science. Galileo is a great example of this, where they put him under house arrest. And many people don't know this. Galileo's name, with respect to having the audacity to state that the earth revolves around the sun, his name wasn't cleared by the Vatican, I want to say, until the early 1990s. So his name had that asterisk next to it for many, many years, even after it was firmly established that he was right. So this anti-technology, anti-science view is very troubling, not just because of the history of the church being perhaps anti-science, but also when you look at what's going on today with respect to technology. You can look at pharmaceuticals recently with COVID, what energy does for quality of life on life expectancy and infant mortality. We've talked about that in prior podcasts. GMOs, when it comes to agriculture, capital markets, what global finance has done with respect to the human condition. You want more of those if your objective is to optimize the human condition for your followers within the religion or for just the human race across the globe, not less of those. Yet when you read this encyclical that Pope Francis has issued, you come away with almost the exact opposite conclusion. Now, when you start to get a religious leader talking about complicated, complex climate systems, energy policy issues, you come up with views that might sound really good from a soundbite optics perspective, but you know don't survive any sort of scrutiny beyond the superficial. You see him talk about a circular model of production that hasn't been identified yet. He's lamenting that we haven't identified this yet, that preserves resources for future generations, but then limits as much as possible the use of non-renewable resource. So now you're getting into this popular tagline of renewable energy, the fallacy of it. Things like wind and solar electricity generation, they are far from renewable. Even though we say and tout them as renewable, they are not that. In fact, they have massive, as we discussed in earlier episodes of the Far Middle podcast, massive carbon footprints and have massive CO2 emission footprints when you look at them on a life cycle basis, as you should. He mentions in his encyclical, the Pope does, a very solid scientific consensus when he's talking about global warming. I'm going to remember that catchphrase. That's a really interesting one, a very solid scientific consensus. We talked in a prior podcast episode about how science is never about consensus. It's about challenging, tearing down consensus time and time again. Going back to Galileo, he tore down the consensus that everything revolves around the earth and replaced it with a more correct one. So the job of a scientist in science at large is to challenge consensus, not to embrace a very solid scientific consensus. I don't know what very solid means, by the way, but nevertheless, there you have it. And as you read on through his environmental encyclical, you get to see now these roads converging of expanding authoritative influence, maybe personally from the position of Pope, and also this this bolstering of the business model, so to speak, of the Catholic Church. You see this now when it comes to the climate change issue. And the Pope in his encyclical says that basically there's a need for a change of lifestyle. And there's also the need to change production and consumption patterns on all kinds of different activities across the globe. And why do we need to do all these things? Well, we need to fight the warming or at least the human contributions to it. So what you see here is a pretty I think, genius approach in some ways to catalyzing interest, growth, and the influence of not just the Pope, but also the Catholic Church. So you got these headwinds that we spoke about where the church is under a bit of duress and they're seeing its influence waning. What do you need? Well, you need a cause. You need a cause to energize the base. That would be the existential crisis of humanity, which is climate change. And what is the cause of that crisis? You need something that's going to be used by everybody and everyone and everything, which of course is carbon and the CO2 that is emitted when you utilize carbon. And then what do you do? Well, you take that and you start to develop a pretty relentless, a consistent, a very focused ground game of messaging. And you message across all kinds of different stakeholders and using all kinds of different tools to do so. And then what do you come in with? You come in with an answer. How do you find, in the case of religion, salvation? That's the answer with a religion. Well, you offer up your salvation through social engineering. And that social engineering, of course, is going to impose top-down decision-making across a bunch of different facets of daily life. Now, that can be fuel economy standards. It can be new types of light bulbs. It can be carbon taxes. It can be all kinds of things. But isn't the organized religion, one of its core strengths, something like top-down decision-making? The Catholic Church, in particular, has a history of being very adept at that. And this could be the climate change zealotry from the Pope, the environmental encyclical, and then all the named causes of it and the proffered solutions could be nothing more than a way to help the church reconquer its lost dominion over personal decision-making and daily life. One of the most unforgivable behaviors or situations that you see with Pope Francis when it comes to this push to expand his authority or influence, coupled with trying to rebrand and restart growth for the Catholic Church, really comes down to the issue of China and the Chinese Communist Party. China actually has a very significant Catholic following. And of course, we all know that the Chinese Communist Party looks with disdain upon any organized religion. I will say this, the Chinese Communist Party does not discriminate. It goes after Catholics, it goes after Muslims, it goes after evangelicals, it'll go after any organized religion of any type because it's a threat to its authoritative regime and way of thinking about things. But yet Francis has this desire to grow the Catholic faith within the most populous country on earth. So China, again, using the business analogy, is quite the lucrative potential market for the product of Catholicism. And Francis and his predecessors have always been focused upon China and trying to grow the brand in that area of the world. But what you see recently now is the clash of Chairman Xi leading the Chinese Communist Party and Pope Francis with the Catholic Church coming to a head. And so far, based on the results that we've seen, Chairman Xi is definitely winning the day and gaining the upper hand. It's very discouraging to see what's happened to the faithful in China. You've seen the setting up and the creation by the government of the Patriotic Catholic Church, the PCA, and that is basically ripping away the role of the Vatican in terms of leadership. You're seeing this with bishops in China that were Vatican placed and Vatican elected that are now being demoted and replaced by bishops that are being named by the Chinese Communist Party. That's a very interesting development, to say the least. It completely, in a very visible manner, undermines the entire authority of the Pope. You think about the authority of the Pope, one of the most essential authorities and powers is to name bishops. That's been taken away by the Chinese Communist Party. If you are a priest or a bishop that doesn't toe the line when it comes to the Patriotic Catholic Church, you either go underground or if you're found out, you're going to be jailed or imprisoned or harmed in some way, persecuted in some way. We've seen that time and time again. You also see that the Chinese Communist Party is now undertaking a retranslation of the Bible. And I can assure you that that new translation is going to tweak certain areas of the Bible to make it much more accommodating to communism. And where that sits relative to what the Bible was supposed to say or traditional Catholic doctrine, I guess we'll have to wait and see. And you also see the persecution other ways. It's almost a battle of the business models where Francis trying to push the brand of Catholicism in China and then basically acquiescing or appeasing the Chinese Communist Party to try to get in its good graces, well, it becomes a self-fulfilling and self-frustrating purpose because now what you're going to see is the Chinese Communist Party that's banning the admitting of minors into the churches and the Catholic faith, which is actually happening. So it's killing off the lifeblood of the followers and the base. And the ironic part of that is that the reason why Pope Francis is appeasing the Chinese Communist Party is to try to grow the following of Catholicism within the most populous country on earth. So, whether the Chinese Communist Party is tearing down churches, which they're doing along with mosques and other types of religious structures, or whether you're seeing prominent Catholics. The most recent example was a Hong Kong media mogul, Jimmy Lai. I'm not sure if you follow that or not, but he's a very prominent, perhaps the most prominent Catholic in China because of his position in the media world. He's been imprisoned. He's disappeared. I don't know where he's at. Cardinal Zen went through some trials and tribulations, both in China as well as in Rome, trying to get to Pope Francis to make his plea. And the welcome that he received was less than optimal, I'll put it at that. No matter what the behaviors are, the ones we've mentioned or the countless others that we haven't mentioned, you've got this strange situation. You've got a pope who's been very vocal, has never hesitated to put his two cents in, so to speak, or express his views on climate change, energy policy, capitalism, the United States, presidents within the United States at different times. But yet when it comes to China, the Chinese Communist Party and Chairman Xi, very quiet, almost, as I said, appeasement to the point where it's eradicating Catholicism in China and oppressing Catholics that dare to follow it. So what gives? Well, there's one of two possible explanations. One goes back to the headwinds that the business model of the Catholic Church is facing, and Pope Francis taking a look at the numbers and saying, most populous country on earth, and all the potential growth that we could have there if we would jumpstart the numbers of adherents and followers of the faith, maybe we need to make some concessions and accommodations with respect to the Communist Party to get that going and get that growing. Another possible explanation is just pure ego. Perhaps Pope Francis wants to be the first pope to celebrate Mass in somewhere like Tiananmen Square, in the optics that would provide not just for his brand and his ego personally, but also, again, to jumpstart that business model, the customer base, so to speak, of the Catholic Church in China. We don't know. No one can know for sure other than Pope Francis. But once again, no matter what you might suppose the case to be or the driver to be, certainly there is a massive hypocrisy going on when you look at how Pope Francis takes just about everyone in the developed and Western world to task, often unfairly so or unreasonably so. But yet when it comes to the Chinese Communist Party, not just a complete pass, but almost a complete and total appeasement. In growing the brand of the Catholic Church or the individual brand of Pope Francis, whether it's with what's going on in China tactically or environmental encyclical and climate change and the perils of it, this also all gets tied into a once popular prior practice of the Catholic Church, not a good one, and dollars and cents, sort of the money or the financial motivator in all this. And that tactic that I'm referencing is the tactic of indulgences. I don't know if you are familiar with indulgences, but what they were at the time was when the Catholic Church allowed Catholics to basically wipe clean their sins or the sins of loved ones in your family that had died by performing good acts or, and this is the or part that's critical, by making donations to the church. So many people sometimes looked at that and said, you know, it's buying your way or buying a loved one's way into heaven or out of hell. Some people call it a get out of hell free card if you're willing to pay the price. Now, any religion, right, that's going to define for its followers what is sin and then turns around and says, now here's the charges for the different types of sins that we're going to define, that's a troubling proposition. And it wasn't surprising that as the use of indulgences became more and more popular by the Catholic Church, that at some point in the early 1500s, a guy by the name of Martin Luther took a look at this and said, boy, this isn't very upstanding. I think I'm going to nail 95 theses up on a door. And that, of course, started the Protestant movement. So indulgences had its consequences in a big way for the Catholic Church. But when you tie that history to what's going on today, I fear that Pope Francis is trying to reincarnate, to reintroduce, resurrect, perhaps, pun intended, the practice of indulgences. And what I mean by that is if you think about climate change and the environmental encyclical and some of the different avenues and solutions that the Pope proffers in the encyclical, you come away with a series of different payments, of transfer payments. They can be very small. So this could be something as small as a little bit more that you pay for your utility bill or to fill up or charge up your car, whether it's gasoline powered or electric, if you're in a developed world and a consumer, or it could be something quite large. It could be trillions of dollars of transfer payments between developed nations and developing nations with respect to different transfer payments, all under the umbrella of climate change, saving the planet, doing what's right, doing what's moral, that you clearly hear or come across when you read the encyclical on the environment from Pope Francis. And I might also suppose that if you have these massive transfer payments, hidden indulgences, so to speak, from the small payments on a consumer-by-consumer, individual-by-individual basis, or trillions of dollars via transfer of wealth between nations, I'd guess that somewhere in there, the Catholic Church, under Pope Francis's view of things, would somehow be a beneficiary of some of those indulgences and transfer payments. That would be unfortunate because, again, the problem with indulgences are twofold. One, they're morally corrupt. And two, history within the Catholic Church has proven they have serious and negative consequences for the religion itself. So as we come down the home stretch of this episode of the Far Middle Podcast, I have to tell you, constant listener, I am very concerned as an American Catholic. And it's not just because I'm alone. This is, I think, a concern shared by many who are Catholics in the United States. I talked about the demographics in Brazil and how challenging that was for the Vatican. We've got the same situation going on in the United States. Less than 40% of American Catholics attend Mass regularly. And that decline in attendance, you see it across all age groups, all demographics. It's just not unique to one subset. So a lot of people are feeling the same way that I am because they're seeing a pope that is pushing and pulling the church into areas and into waters that traditionally have nothing to do with respect to Catholic doctrine and Catholic doctrine expertise. I also pointed out some historical examples through this podcast. We talked about Galileo and how the church has been taking anti-science positions for many periods of its history. And that might be occurring today with the Pope's view and encyclical on the environment. We talked about Martin Luther and how the practice of indulgences can have serious consequences. I want to give you another one, which is Lord Acton. Now, Lord Acton was a very prominent British Catholic, and he started to take exception to the Vatican in the 1870s when the Pope at the time, Pope Pius IX, established this doctrine of papal infallibility. And Acton's perspective was a very rational one, which is popes are human beings and no human being can be infallible all of the time. That's quite logical and quite rational. And also people think that Lord Acton is only associated with his most famous quote, which of course was all power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But he also had a less famous, but I think an even more applicable quote that came in around 1887. And his statement was that, quote, there is no worse hearsay than that the office sanctifies the holder of it, end quote, which really goes and speaks to the authoritative power of the Pope and papal infallibility and where Pope Francis is trying to take that. I started the podcast talking about how Pope Francis started out with a lot of excitement as Pope and then evolved into anti-Pope because of what he was doing and where he was pulling the Catholic Church to and into. What can you do to reverse course, to do a 180 and move from anti-Pope back to the excitement that we saw initially with Pope Francis and into the realm of a traditional and a very effective papacy? I think there's a couple of simple things. I'll start with, frankly, consistency. Just being consistent would do wonders. And you see consistency two ways, I think, with Pope Francis or lack thereof. Look at standards and expectations. If you're going to hold the business community or the energy industry or the United States or the developed world to one level of standards, and some of those standards recognizing that they're unreasonable, but nevertheless, you've got these standards you're holding them to, you need to hold other entities, specifically authoritative regimes, to the same standards. So you can't give Cuba a pass or Venezuela or Bolivia a pass or, in the example that we discussed extensively, China a pass when it comes to those standards. That creates inconsistency. That ruins credibility. Two, on a consistency front to consider is on one hand, if on Monday you're saying, who am I to judge? on a particular issue or with a specific individual. And then on Tuesday, you are openly and harshly judging another individual or another topic. That once again creates some inconsistency. And recognize that the Pope, I'm not so sure the Pope should take a view of who am I to judge, because he's there to judge very methodically on issues that fall within the traditional morals and ethics of the Catholic faith. So he should be judging in certain instances and on certain topics. So consistency, I think, would do wonders. Another thing that would help tremendously would be to have Pope Francis restart the stalled dynamism that we saw at the beginning of his tenure. It's stalled. It's definitely dead in the water, and it needs to be restarted immediately as soon as possible. And one way I think you can do that would be to inject some new excitement, broader thought, wider perspective into statements from the Pope, the written position papers, the encyclicals. If you look at that work product history over the last couple of years, they become more and more closed-minded, more and more narrow. He often quotes himself, most often in these writings. Expanding those horizons, being more balanced, more open-minded, I think would be very inspirational to Catholics across the board, and frankly, inspirational to a lot of stakeholders outside of the Catholic faith. Now, why is all this important on getting this right? Why do we need an effective pope? Because we've seen, you know, we talked about some of the negative periods of history in the Catholic Church, which is certainly evident, but we've also seen very positive ones. And we've seen times and periods where effective leadership from the papacy can uplift the human condition across wide swaths of this planet. And who wouldn't want more of that? Well, this wraps up episode 10, hard to believe, of our Far Middle podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly have, and we'll be back in touch with number 11 coming up soon.